89 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today once again is James Wilson of the Blogging by Simulate website. Welcome back, James.
Thank you very much, Rob. Appreciate it.
All right. This has been a great week. Let's keep it going. This is a lot of fun. So episode 99 begins with Danny pleading with Willie and goes all the way till the point where Danny explains what his plan actually is. So this scene basically continues from the scene that we started yesterday, where Danny tries to get out in the middle of the night. Basically, this entire minute discusses that. We get an entire minute of Charles Bronson and John Layton discussing the pros and cons of trying to get out via a tunnel or try and get out under the wire or through the wire, however you want to look at it.
And we get Charles Bronson's version of his origin story when I was a boy.
That's right. I mean, this is a very dialogue-driven minute. Because it's just the conversation between two of them, but they're not as quiet as they probably should be.
No.
That's always a slight problem.
Danny, we're still in a prisoner of war camp.
Yes. Danny says to Willie, "Stop! Just leave me alone." Now, the interesting thing here is that the two of them we've seen throughout the entire movie that these are two peas in a pod. They're the best of friends. They work together on everything. Even on the first day or first 20 minutes that they're in the camp, there's the telling scene where Danny asks Willie for cigarettes, and he just pulls out and gives it to him, showing that they're sharing things. This isn't, you'd think that anyone who's in a prison camp is going to care of themselves first, but here you see, you're able to see throughout the movie how close the two of these are, these guys are. You know, nothing gets between them. It just amazes me that this is the first time that Willie's heard any of this.
Yeah. You're telling me this.
Exactly.
Now?
You waited till you've gone through 17 escape attempts before you told me this. Now, in the original script it's even funnier because I think they said that this was his 76th escape attempt. Which obviously for good reason they changed to 17. The seventh tunnel, sorry, not his escape attempt.
Yeah, 17th tunnel. Probably, given the way he tried to get out on the hay wagons at the beginning with the pitchforks, we're talking about also unsuccessful, sort of ad-libbed on the fly escaped attempts.
Yeah, there's no question about that. But if the two of them are so close, they should have had a conversation at some point over the, let's say, year or 2 years that they've been together, you know, in the camp. I mean, obviously this is all for us. It's not for Willie.
Yes.
It's for the audience to get a better understanding as to the things that people are willing to do in order to try and escape.
Right.
In order to you know, the fact that he's claustrophobic and that he's always been claustrophobic. Now, it would have been very interesting, you know, if he would have explained, you know, if he had his reasons why he thinks he's claustrophobic, because he basically only says, when I was a boy, you know, I hated and feared going into little rooms, closets, or caves. He never really explains, you know, that when I was a kid, I went into a cave and there was a bear and, you know, I don't know. You know, usually the trauma comes from something. You might not know what the trauma comes from, obviously, but I think it would have been interesting if he would have said, if he would have given more of a reason, because I mean, Charles Bronson, he's the 70s action hero. You know, in the 60s, he's also got some great gruff roles. You know, you got him in the Magnificent Seven. You have him here. You have him in one of your favorite movies.
Once Upon a Time in the West. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, there are plenty of movies with Charles Bronson where he is, you know, he's the Schwarzenegger of his time.
Yes.
You know, he was the actor that they put in all of the in any movie where you needed, I guess you could say, a normal everyday man placed in an action situation. So I guess Schwarzenegger's not the right example. I guess maybe more like a Bruce Willis.
Much more like that. It's sort of,
yeah.
He's not typically handsome, which is why he started his career playing gangsters and thugs. like in Pat and Mike and Mystery of the Wax Museum. He was also a great character actor, which is where John Sturges picked him up and started putting him in his movies as well.
Right. I mean, I first of all, it still always amazes me to think about the fact that you know, Charles Bronson, he usually plays foreign characters, yeah. but he was born in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
You know, he's not, he's as American as you get.
Yes.
You know, here he plays a Polish character, and in The Dirty Dozen, he also plays, I think, a Polish character.
Yeah.
In The Magnificent Seven, and Once Upon a Time in the West, he seems like he's a
Mexican. Yeah.
Right. He's not your typical American. But he actually, as opposed to James Coburn, is actually able to play the foreigner quite well. Yeah, James Coburn has a little bit of trouble playing the Australian here.
Well, he was cast late, so you know.
Either way, you know, they could have easily changed the character from being Australian to something else. But I think they were trying to make it seem more international.
Well, Richard Harris, you know.
Richard Harris. That was Richard Harris was supposed to play Roger.
Oh, are you kidding?
Not Sedgwick. Richard Attenborough took over the role that Richard Harris was supposed to play.
I can't see it. I cannot see it. But
I think I probably could see it. But again, I think Attenborough plays this part perfectly. I mean, we could talk a little bit more about Attenborough tomorrow when we actually get to see him.
We get to see him, yeah.
So we'll hold off that discussion on Attenborough until tomorrow. We'll discuss Richard Harris and Attenborough tomorrow.
It's funny you should say the thing about James Coburn, because I used to teach a post-production class, and one of the movies that we did where we basically stripped out all the sound and put it back together was The Great Escape. And they asked me to play Sedgwick, to provide the voice of Sedgwick. And I said, all right, but this time it's going to be a consistent Australian accent.
you can do an Australian accent really well?
No, but I said it was going to be consistent.
All right. Danny and Willie are both arguing physically and verbally throughout this whole scene. I mean, they're punching each other, and I think there's one point where one of them kicks the other one also. It's like they look like two rowdy teenagers. You know, having a, you know, a
rout, yeah, he punches Danny in the nose.
Yeah.
And almost hits the barracks.
which would have made a lot of noise also.
Certainly would have made a lot of noise, because they were using the standard face slap hit that they used in sound effects libraries.
Yeah. Hey, come on, he really punches him in the face. Wow. And then he pulls him back, and you know, he holds the wire cutters, and he looks like he's about to really just clobber him with the wire cutters, you know. Which it takes a lot of restraint to not do that.
But you know, you think, okay, what are they're at this point where they're hitting each other. What are they going to do if they actually knock the other guy out?
That's true.
Drag him back, because that's going to make a lot of noise as well. You know,
or even draw blood, or you know.
Well, I'm sure there was a lot of blood there already, but you know, for crying out loud, it's like you're making noise. I mean, those guard towers are manned, so, and they're in the middle of the woods, so. In this big plane, and it's like the sound carries. So, what are you making all the noise for? And
yeah,
can we do this sotto voce, guys? Stage whisper,
if you want. Again, I think that's the audience, but still,
yeah,
it's very inconsistent with what they should be doing. You know, they should be a little quieter with what they're discussing, you know. And again, when he punches him in the nose, so he hits the wall. There are sounds, and I mean, we know that they they're they have guards patrolling with dogs too. I mean, this isn't just something. Something's a little strange here. You know, about the fact that, I mean, again, I understand why we need the scene. It's a very important scene. You know, to tell us that you know, you can be one of the Tunnel Kings, but you can at the same time be very claustrophobic.
Yeah. Rob.
Exactly. That's right. 17. No. Sorry. It was 17, but he started 3 tunnels here, so he's already up to 20. He's up to 19, because 17 was the first one. Tom was 17, Dick? And then you have 19. Dick and Harry. So 19. All right. But still, that's a nice amount of tunnels to dig. Now, and also, when Tom was found out, they said that they were close to 300 feet. That's a very, very long distance, you know, for someone claustrophobic to be dealing with, especially since we get to see that there are numerous cave-ins, you know, that even cave-ins that Danny himself needs to deal with. It's all quite interesting, you know, that this now comes out, the whole fact that he's claustrophobic. The question is whether any time he had a chance to get out via tunnel, he decided to go out under the wire instead. Because again, if he's dug already 16 tunnels in previous camps that he's been in, you know, were any of them successful in getting out? Now, we know that at the beginning, Von Luger goes through the whole roster of characters and says how many times each of them got out. He does mention Danny at that point. I don't remember the exact amount of times. Maybe he just said 4 times for Danny. I'm not really sure. I mean,
he did try to escape attempts.
There's no question about
it. You got the impression he was a veteran. But on the other hand, you know. So let's catalog the number of things we find wrong with this. Number one, Willie and Danny might have mentioned this before. Number two, they're making a lot of noise in the middle of the camp, the middle of the night. Number three, they're hitting each other when the ultimate end of hitting each other is going to end up making even more noise than they wanted. Was there anything else particularly weird about this scene?
I think that's enough, isn't it? Well, we discussed about the lighting yesterday. We talked about the lighting, because the lighting issues continue here. There's no question about that.
Yes, at least there's that one rotating light that's manned in the guard tower. So, you know, it's sweeping across ever so often. But then we also mentioned that there were little outdoor lights that were staggered every other barracks.
Right.
One of which they run right under, supposedly.
Because it's so simple to do so.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true. You never really know.
Run to the light, Denny. That's what the cinematographer said. Bruce Surtees was the cinematographer on this?
No, the cinematographer on this movie was Daniel Phapp.
Daniel Phapp.
Are you familiar with him?
I've never heard that name before. Daniel Phapp.
I think I've discussed this in the past. I think he won an Oscar for his work on West Side Story.
Right. And it looks like he did a lot of things with John Sturges.
Yeah, he did Marooned also. Yep. Which I love that movie. That's such a great, it's just a fun movie that came out at the perfect time.
And Ice Station Zebra.
Yes.
And he did Flint.
Yep. And so with Coburn.
Yeah. And let's see, Bachelor Flat, which I believe was with, I think that was with Garner. No, I'm thinking it's wrong.
Which
Bachelor
one?
Bachelor Flat? No.
No. You're thinking, I know what you're thinking of. You're thinking of
the one with Tony Randall and Howard Morris and Howard Duff.
I
saw it not too long ago on Turner, and I was going, oh, that's interesting.
Right. No, I thought you were talking about Boys Night Out. I thought that's what you were referring
to. Yes, Boys Night Out. That's it. Yep.
Tony Randall's in Boys Night Out? I didn't remember that.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Kim Novak.
Yep.
A very interesting movie that that has some very strange. It's like The Apartment. You know, there's certain there's certain things that they just gloss over in throughout the whole the way that the story moves along. You know, and here they, you know, in Boys in the Out, they make it seem as if it's all in the name of science.
Yes.
Sociology. Bizarre.
Yes. Daniel Pfaff, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Right. Now, so I can't find where they mention the number of times that he tries to escape. He does mention it. In the movie, it is mentioned. Von Luger discusses the number of attempts that all of the various characters tried to get out. And he mentioned Valinsky. There's no question about that. Here we go. Ashley Pitt, Ives, Willie. Willie was known to have participated in digging of 11 escape tunnels. Okay. Valinsky, only 4 escapes. That's it. So that's actually not very many. You know, he's done 16...
Still.
16 tunnels before he reached here, and he only got out 4 times. So I guess it's, he's batting 250, as they say. You know, when it comes, there's a great quote from a John Cusack movie, The Martian Boy or something like that, where he discusses about baseball as to why baseball is the greatest game in the world.
Because you can fail 2/3 of the time and still be one of the greatest players.
Exactly. I think it's Martian Child. And the quote is, you know what's really cool about baseball? You know what I love about baseball? Baseball is the only sport where you can fail 70% of the time and still be great. It's about trying hard and never, ever, ever giving up. Just think about it. If you get a hit 3 out of every 10 times you're at bat, you're really good. If you do it a little better than that, you're a little bit better than that. Maybe 3.2, 3.3 times, you're great. And you could be a star, and you're going to make it into the show. And if you do that on the big show, you're a superstar. So, again, the idea that we're talking about digging tunnels, but if you're able to get out 4 of 16 tunnels, that's pretty impressive, because you're getting close to perfection.
Yes. But the ultimate triumph is that you keep getting to do it.
Wait, you're talking about digging tunnels or playing baseball?
Digging tunnels. Escaping from prisoner of war camps.
All right, well, you have anything else to say about this minute?
I think we're good. I think we've slaughtered this scene.
I think they did it on their own, and we're just pointing it out. I think that's more like what more likely the case here. So, Jimmy, you want to once again tell everyone how they can get in touch with you?
Sure, you can always reach, you can't reach me. You can read me at Blogging by Cinema Light, which is my movie blog. And I occasionally do things for the Large Association of Blogs, too. And we'll see you there.
All right, great. And you can get in touch with us by going to our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. You can send us an email, thegreatminute@gmail.com. You can visit our Facebook group, The Coola. And you can write to us on Twitter at Great Escape MXM. So, Jim, you want to come back tomorrow, finish off the week with us?
Let's do it.
All right, excellent. So, until tomorrow, enjoy your Thursday, everyone, and tally-ho.
Tally-ho.